views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
This is the Code Breakers. This is Paradox. I got T on the line in DC. We are here again. Today is January 31st, 2017. And we're going to go to a clip to get the show, to kind of open the show up. It's about a 2-minute long clip. And so once we get that started, then we'll be ready to rock and roll with the program. We do appreciate everybody jumping on, listening in. Appreciate to the callers, obviously, as always. I'm glad we got D and T here again tonight to get things going, I should say. And we're going to be discussing a few different topics. But one thing we'll be discussing is the War Tribe. And we're going to try to discuss how white people as a collective group, are really just, it almost seems like they're designed just to go to war. And so we're going to try to put some context around just how, just historically speaking, and just kind of see or try to get some understanding of what we're seeing as far as the level of violence that they've committed on this planet. I think we're going to get ready and go to the clip.
Actually, Paradox, greetings to you and greetings to the fellas. That clip is not coming up. When I click on the link, I knew it was something that was going on, but when I click on to the link, YouTube says the video doesn't exist. So somebody could have deleted it since you last watched it.
That quick, yeah, that's possible. Let me see, you're right, too. I just gotta, you're right, I gotta error myself. Let me see, can I, you know what we can do? Let's try the, let's go to the, give me 1 second here. Let's see, I should not play for a clip. Let's do, can you play that last clip, Fog of War?
Yes, sir. Give me just a moment as I pull it up
for you. I appreciate it. That's about a 7-minute clip, just so the audience know.
LeMay was focused on only one thing. Target destruction. Most Air Force generals could tell you how many planes they had, how many tons of bombs they dropped, or whatever the hell it was. But he was the only person that I knew in the senior command of the Air Force who focused solely on the loss of his crews per unit of target destruction. I was on the island of Guam in his command in March of 1945. In that single night, we burned to death 100,000 Japanese civilians in Tokyo, men, women, and children.
Were you aware this was going to happen?
Well, I was part of a mechanism that in a sense recommended it. I analyzed bombing operations and how to make them more efficient, i.e., not more efficient in the sense of killing more, but more efficient in weakening the adversary. I wrote one report analyzing the efficiency of the B-29 operations. The B-29 could get above the fighter aircraft and above the air defense, so the loss rate would be much less. The problem was, the accuracy was also much less. Now, I don't want to suggest that it was my report that led to, I'll call it, the firebombing. It isn't that I'm trying to absolve myself of blame for the firebombing. I don't want to suggest that it was I that put in LeMay's mind that his operations were totally inefficient and had to be drastically changed. But anyhow, that's what he did. He took the B-29s down to 5,000 feet, and he decided to bomb with firebombs. ...50 square miles of Tokyo were burned. Tokyo was a wooden city, and when we dropped these firebombs, and it just burned it.
The choice of incendiary bombs, where did that come from?
I think the issue is not so much incendiary bombs. I think the issue is, in order to win a war, should you kill 100,000 people in one night by firebombing or any other way? LeMay's answer would be clearly yes. McNamara, do you mean to say that instead of killing 100,000, burning to death 100,000 Japanese civilians, in that one night, we should have burned to death a lesser number or none, and then had our soldiers cross the beaches in Tokyo and been slaughtered in the tens of thousands? Is that what you're proposing? Is that moral? Is that wise? Why was it necessary to drop the nuclear bomb if LeMay was burning up Japan? And he went on from Tokyo to firebomb other cities. 58% of Yokohama. Yokohama is roughly the size of Cleveland. 58% of Cleveland destroyed. Tokyo is roughly the size of New York. 51% of New York destroyed. 99% of the equivalent of Chattanooga, which was Toyama. 40% of the equivalent of Los Angeles, which was Nagoya. This was all done before the dropping of the nuclear bomb, which, by the way, was dropped by LeMay's command. Proportionality should be a guideline in war. Killing 50 to 90% of the people of 67 Japanese cities and then bombing them with two nuclear bombs is not proportional, in the minds of some people, to the objectives we were trying to achieve. I don't fault Truman for dropping the nuclear bomb. The U.S.-Japanese War was one of the most brutal wars in all of human history. Kamikaze pilots, suicide, unbelievable. What one can criticize is that the human race prior to that time and today has not really grappled with what are, I'll call it, the rules of war. Was there a rule then that said you shouldn't bomb, shouldn't kill, shouldn't burn to death 100,000 civilians in a night? LeMay said, if we'd lost the war, we'd all have been prosecuted as war criminals. And I think he's right. He, and I'd say I, were behaving as war criminals. LeMay recognized that what he was doing would be thought immoral if his side had lost. But what makes it immoral if you lose and not immoral if you win?
All right. So we got to the end of the clip. I think DC is on the DC and T. Are you fellas there? But no, DC said he was dropping off, so I want to make sure he's there.
He unmuted himself, but we don't hear him.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
All right, we can now.
All right. Good. Greetings, everyone. Hope everyone is doing well. Wow. Powerful clip. T, are you there?
Yeah, he missed.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can hear
you. Yes, sir.
Good evening.
So, Paradox, so how do you feel about the Secretary of Defense? Robert McNamara, and if anybody was want to kind of like just to give a little bit of background, that was the prior Secretary of State during the conflict of Vietnam War. He was part of both the World War II experience. Pretty much, I'm pretty sure he was most likely a part of all the wars, all the conflicts during that time period between World War II when he was a young man still. He lived for a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, relatively speaking, you know, when it comes down to the group that classified themselves as white, I think he died at 93 years of age. He died fairly recently, 2009. Robert Strange McNamara, that's his name, his full government name, as far as what's been disclosed. Yes, the middle name of this self-proclaimed war criminal, outside of his lips, he basically confirmed in himself, Robert Strange McNamara.
Do you know which what generation he is?
Oh, he's in the greatest generation.
No. Right. No. And again, the reason why I'm asking you this is that this is just for the audience in general, just people that you interact with. You need to, I think you should qualify people and try to kind of get an idea of you know, just where they're from. And I think that also assists in getting an understanding of how the line works. So the reason why I was asking you that was, is he first or second generation white? Do you know?
Second.
Do you know if it's it?
He's second generation.
So his family came.
He's Irish descendant.
Okay.
And I think his mom was either Polish or, let me just see, because pretty much most of those people.
So they came during the early 1900s. Time.
Yeah, it said that his father's family was Irish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, following the Great Irish Famine. So
yeah. So he's second generation white, and second generation on his land, right?
Yeah, second. I think maybe third generation. I think his father may have been born here, so he may be third generation. But he's still fairly recent. His people was not here during the advent of the, Revolutionary War or anything of that nature. So it was late 1800s or early 1900s that they came over.
Okay.
He was born in 1919, so it is a chance that his father was born.
Overseas.
So he may still be, you know.
But he may have came over as a toddler. I mean, we don't know, right?
No, he was born in San Francisco, California. Okay. So it's been documented.
Okay.
You know, who knows? but yeah, his people come by way of Massachusetts, and then they moved out to California. So most of them always come from the East Coast out west to get the gold, the gold rush during the 1800s. So Western Empire, you know, the manifest destiny.
And a lot of them went out there to go kill natives as well. You know, that was their motivation too.
But I found it.
I think they tend to hop it under the gold rush.
You
had killers traveling to go out there to do that. But anyway, I don't want to stick on that.
Yeah, let me give context though. He served under President John F. Kennedy, so he was the Secretary of Defense during the Bay of Pigs, and he also served the duration of Lyndon Johnson's term. So just in case anyone think that John F. Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson were not warmongers, murderers, killers of people that were not white and were not all about the empire or the military complex, then you're sadly mistaken, because he was the architect of these massacres that did happen worldwide. T, did you have a quick comment before we jump into it real quick?
No, just listening in. So I guess I'll jump in once as you all go on.
Cool.
Go ahead.
So what I found interesting was that the matter of fact way that he spoke, and I think that another point of reference that I would give people is, if you want to see exactly what we mean when we say racism, white supremacy, and how big this thing is, and how the scope of it, being honest and being realistic about what the lay of the land is and the reason why people feel the way they do now. You know, you got to remember, this is during the McCarthy era. Not too different than what people are experiencing right now. And I think that normally, which is, you know, a lot of the programs, we tend to go back as far as our program, because we like to give people context as far as what you're seeing now, in the form of Donald J. Trump, a unapologetic white person, representation of white, where he just he really don't care what you think, what you're talking about. You know, I even think that people actually tell him what to say, and he gets up there and he just does his own thing. He just appointed another white male to the Supreme Court, very young white male. You know, I think I don't even think he's out of his 40s yet. So this gentleman will be on the Supreme Court for the next 30 years, 30 to 40 years. Like, I mean, this is not rocket science. And I think that what we like to do with this code breaker perspective, with us trying to decipher code, to look beyond the veil, look beyond whatever groups that you want to, you know, echo chambers that you tend to reside in. The people that make the decisions are the people that you see at these press conferences. the Secretary of Defense, the Press Secretary. These are people that have direct impact on your life. Forget about the rhetoric about speaking and doing all this and protesting. In my opinion, if you study the way this group moves, the war tribe, the people that kill overseas to establish empire, then you get a great idea of what this is. The Fog of War is a great documentary in the sense that you have a man in the twilight of his life basically coming to grips with being a mass murderer, like literally confessing. It's like he's in a tribunal, like he is basically spilling out the complexity of what an empire is and the weight of it, even though he made logical and cold decisions. I think there was where he basically said that they destroyed half of Tokyo.
Yeah.
Like these cities, people that make these comments about Asian empires, and they lost.
They got their ass whooped. They got destroyed.
I'm not trying to cast aspersions. Shout out to Stephen A. Smith, victim of racism. Very confused victim of racism, that is. But you have to understand the gravity of that. He's listing cities in conjunction to what they did. These are incendiary bombs. So he made a comment. I don't know. I couldn't really hear the clip. But in the clip, he makes a comment about most of the foundation, most of the buildings that was built at that time. Of course, They are from the old country. So they were not built with brick and mortar. So you're not dealing with harsh, you know, material. You know, most of it is wooden areas, plaster doors. You know, if you look at the old samurai movies, most of those foundations, the doors were made out of like a sheet. So if you put a fire to it, that's it. So the incendiary bombs, just to give you an idea, is just a firebomb. You know, just a big old firebomb that if you lay waste to a landmass that is covered with wooden houses or houses that are not... We have row homes in D.C. So if you, of course, if one row home catch fire, Paradox, you know this. What happens to the block? The block has a chance of coming down. The whole street. Mm-hmm. Because if it's wood and it's not brick, the only thing that's going to be remaining is the brick. Everything else is burned. Everything else is laid to waste. That's what this is. And he's giving illustrations. He's like, we did this before we even dropped the nuclear weapons. It's not like they didn't already devastate. And we're talking about multiple cities. Cities that were people that were peaceful, people that were not fighting now. These were people that wasn't fighting. This is what we mean by the war tribe. A point has to be made. It's just like me and you walking outside. See, the comparison is, incendiary. We're talking about incendiary bombs. The beginning of it, if you want to equate this, now think about the response that America has, 9/11, but think about that as just being the start of something. That's it. And just think about it constantly happening throughout. I mean, 50% of New York gone. 50% the inhabitants dead on arrival. This is before, Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Yep,
so I think we need to give credence to the description of what took place during that time period. And what I would like to do is give my compensatory definition for war. And this is a compensatory definition. I am not an expert on war, but I had to come up with a definition that made sense for victims of racism, because how else would you describe what has taken place to the group that is classified as black and have to basically fall victim to somebody else's definitions of who they are and what they will become in the future? So let me get the definition of warfare. Hey, Paradox, if you want to make a comment before I give my definition, go ahead.
You summed it up pretty well. I would just say that if anyone spent time just watching the bombs being dropped, I mean, it definitely does something to you to really show a group of people and what they're willing to do to control, to maintain, and or to establish power. You know, to put themselves in a position, and having the will to do it, having the, you know, I know, man, you had talked about even with Vietnam, where, you know, people made a decision, and the European. And the reason we're calling them the war tribe is that at some time in history, they made a decision. This is what we are. This is what we're good at. And this is how we're going to handle our business. And that's just what it seems. And if you just track it, I, and again, I'm not a historian. So if you just track this through time, just based off the little information that I have, this is what they do. This is what they do. This is, you know, they believe in dominance. They believe in, you know, once they get access to technology, that their mindset is the way we do things is the best way. And if you don't do what we're asking you to do, we will destroy you. We would destroy you to the point where you don't even have history. We would give you history. We would let you set things back up. If you look at some of the places in the East, which is a lot more fascinating, because, you know, it's just kind of them over there. It's interesting that when they rebuilt their little empires, it had to be, you know, under Western control. It had to be approved, basically, by the West. And so it's, and again, I always say it's strange, because they have ego over there. You know, if you don't know what happened, you would think that things, you know, they're doing their own thing, and that it's not interconnected, that they're not plugged in, that they're not being told what to do.
They're independent. You know?
They're independent.
White people don't have no say so in what they're doing.
All right, false. That's what it looks like on the surface, but it's like watching the news or anything else. Like, you'd think that they're telling you real information, and they've created these narratives and scenarios to make you believe whatever you want to believe. But when you just dig in a little bit, it don't take much. We're not saying anything that's really anything. You know, it's more like just go look at the history, and it's kind of in your face. And if you even look at how they do business now, they can put pressure really on whoever they want to put pressure on. And don't get me wrong, and again, and you know what's crazy about it is that it's ongoing. So am I going to sit here and say that people don't fight back at these people? No, but they're warmongers. If you're not in the mindset to take them out completely, if that is not your mindset, they keep coming, and we have evidence of that all over the planet, that they don't stop coming. You beat them, they come back. I mean, these people are relentless, and I don't understand why the planet. I mean, at some point it will click, I guess. You know, people do have their own interests. People are greedy, selfish. I guess all some human traits that unfortunately maybe keeps groups from maybe looking at this group and saying, you know what, we're gonna connect and just go all in. I don't think human beings are set up that way, apparently. I don't think nations and groups connect at that level. Don't know why. Maybe, you know, this is a human thing. I can't put my finger on it. And it just needs time for that, you know, maybe another 1,000 years for those events to take place. But I think that we have to really look at these people, and I wouldn't use the word respectfully, but we really need to take a real hard look at white people, at the European. Really get a clear understanding of how much power do they have, you know? And what's crazy about it is that when you look at it on paper, you would think that they should be the weakest group. You would think that they would be the weakest group when you think about some of these land masses and some of the sheer numbers of humans in certain places on the planet. You would think that they would just be trying to jockey for some crumbs. So it's I would consider it even unusual. I think when you come from an American educational system, and you start to get more information, you open your mind up a little bit, and you start thinking about things, you do start to wonder, like, well, how is this even possible? And I think thinking that sometime probably makes you not want to believe it. It's like, it's not possible, you know, because they will get beat. Obviously, they will lose their power at some point. But to be able to maintain, and we go back even further, you want to go back another 2,000 years. I mean, you can go back kind of far, maybe 2,500 years, depending on how you want to look at it. But, you know, it's been quite a stretch. And in the last 70 years, it's on a level that I really can't process, when these group of people can go and kill and murder and bomb those many people simultaneously on this landmass, lynching, hanging, torturing, terrorizing black people. Right?
I'm ready for the definition, and T, ahead. I can feel you chomping at the bit, so I know you're ready, bro. But just to kind of give people an illustration, and we talked about this. This is way back before we even started this program. We kind of got together and we wanted to put a definition together. Now, I know the fellas have their variations of the definitions, but I'd like to give you the definition that made sense for victims of racism that are now classified or fall into the classification black. The compensatory definition for war: two or more opposing forces or sides that are either trying to maintain, extract, or dominate the other, whoever that other is. The definition of those others or groups of people fall to the victors. Then the ones that are dominated or sexed into adapt to the customs of the oppressors, but don't have the capability to oppose until given permission by those oppressors. That's the definition. Compensatory definition.
I don't know why I thought it was longer.
I know it would. It sounded a lot longer, but the program is real condensed. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is when you're dealing with the European, right? Now I like to go back to antiquity a lot of times on things, because it gives you a more historical perspective. Obviously, we're dealing with the history that we've been provided, so sometimes you got to take things with a grain of salt. But with a lot of things, you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. So I can use that. I think that's try to stay away from cliches as much as possible, but I'll use that one now. With respect to the European, though, in antiquity, you're talking about people who were from the very beginning forged in battle. Their identity is war-based society. And we can go back to, because people talk about the military-industrial complex, and that was, what was that, coined in the 20s? Somewhere in the 20th century, 1900s. I believe that term was coined, but I was thinking about it.
Yeah, I think it was was it Eisenhower?
I believe you're right, yeah, Eisenhower. But people use that term as if it's something new, the military-industrial complex. But when I thought about it, I thought about, medieval times, for example, where you had, I'm not even going to talk about prior to medieval times, like the Roman period or the Greek period, but in the medieval times, you had whole societies, I guess you'd call societies, they were enclaves, essentially, people walled up in castles and running a serfdom-type system. But when I thought about it, I said, well, when you look at, you had all types of military technology. You had chainmail, you had siege weapons, battle rams to knock down castle doors. You had catapults, trebuchets. You had all types of armor for knights. You had, all types of different military technology, swords and bow and arrows, crossbows. And so when I think about the term military-industrial complex, I think about those things in Antioquia, and just I try to think what type of logistics does it take to produce that amount of weaponry, that amount of military technology and force. Now, obviously, in an industrial period, you probably ramp that up a lot quicker, obviously, because you have machinery. But ostensibly, I guess you had blacksmiths hammering out iron weapons and metal.
But they had a labor force. You know, they had a forced labor force back in those days, too. Blacksmiths, like you just said, that they forced into working. And, you know, these people were families. Yeah, they were families. They built swords, and they were mistreated also. That was the bottom floor. That was the reason why it was so hard to maintain their dominance when they basically had the people that was at the bottom forging their weapons. Go ahead.
Yes, and so military-industrial complex, maybe back to that term, because that's a little bit misleading to me, because I think you had a military-industrial complex even then. I think people mistakenly apply that to, you know, recent, you know, century or so.
That's a great way to put it, by the way. Great way to put that.
Yeah, I mean, just think about the amount of time and effort, the amount of labor it requires to build. I mean, you have huge catapults that can sling, you know, a rock that's a couple tons into a stone wall. By the way, the castle was built by labor, too. I mean, you had masonry, you had to build those walls. And so what type of effort and time and technology, military technology, does it take to study that and see how much force it's going to take to knock down castle walls so I can go in and take what you have? That, to me, is very interesting to study that. But again, that goes back to my idea of the fact that I think the European, especially coming from an environment of scarcity and a cold environment, you know, you talk about the Vikings, for instance, who came in and ransacked most of Europe.
Yep.
I mean, they were all about killing. Most of their names even alluded to killing. And they only cared about one thing. They would take men, women, children. It did not matter. They would raid. They had ships that they could sail up into. They had a shallow draft, so they could sail up into very small bodies of water. And before you know it, you know, back then, obviously, you didn't have radar or any type of forewarning system, pre-warning system. And with a few minutes, you could be under attack by people with knives and swords, you know, and just ransack the place.
Can I say something kind of ignorant, if you don't mind? I will say that I'm not going to give Europeans any excuses to be monsters on this planet, to be viruses. And what I mean by that is cold weather and scarcity. This is my own, you know, I don't know if it necessarily produces that behavior. And the only reason why I'm saying that is that it's cold all over this planet. And a lot of other groups of people live in cold areas that have even less resources than they do in the most Nordic parts of Europe. And for some reason, even to this day, those people do not have the same kind of appetite that this group has. But again, that's just my opinion on that.
No, that's a great point. But what are we talking about in antiquity, or are we talking about present day, where we can have access to grocery stores and, you know, modern technology?
Yeah, I mean historically. I mean 50,000 years back. I mean historically, as far as back as we can go.
Yeah, I mean, I think an example of that would be maybe the Eskimos, they lived in a more isolated type of society. But I mean, I think that some of it had to do with the fact that they did come out of a very cold climate that restricted them in terms of abundance. You know, the growing season was relegated to a few months of the year. Whereas if you come from a Mediterranean type environment, quote unquote, the Levant or the Middle East, then you had year-round growing stages, essentially.
Right. When we look at places like southern France and Portugal, we know that those are mild climates, right? Palm trees, nice weather, etc., right? Mm-hmm. Some of the most murderous people came out of Spain and Portugal.
Right. Well, I believe they migrated down to those areas at some point. But I understand what you're saying.
I thought they came from either North Africa or from what we now call the Middle East or Syria.
I think it should be studied further. I believe they came down from the north. Because, I mean, you do have stories of, I don't know how true they are, because it has ties to, I guess, it sounds somewhat like a fable when people talk about people being kicked out of Africa because they were pale skinned.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not sure where you want to go with that, but
I know that gets very messy. I was just really kind of messing with you a little bit on the cold weather thing. I always think it's strange that when you look at, even historically, when you look at weather patterns, that could be a reason. I know that's a theory. I don't know if I don't know how much validity that it has, but I'm not totally sure that cold weather or even living in ice drives that behavior. But I can see how it does correlate. I can see how you can come to that conclusion. Not you per se, but just the general consensus, it seems. But I'm not all the way clear if it's not something deeper. More so than weather and scarce resources. But again, we don't have to really get bogged down on this conversation. I'll let you go ahead and keep going.
Yeah, so but like if you talk about like shock and awe, I remember after 9/11 and they were talking about going into Afghanistan initially, which they did drop bunker busters, all right, which are 1,000-pound bombs that the tip of it actually is a penetrative type metal where it can go through large amounts of earth before it actually explodes. So it doesn't explode on contact. Anyway, they went into Afghanistan and carried out bombing operations. Then all of a sudden we were going into Iraq, and George Bush Jr. gave Saddam Hussein,
hey,
get off a tangent. Yeah.
No, T, just for context, how many non-white countries have bunker busters? Just let me know.
None as far as I know.
Have any of them ever tried to use bunker busters against any European country that has colonized them or anything of that nature? I'm being facetious here because I want to make it clear that these weapons that are being used elsewhere, these other groups are not allowed to use them on their land masses. The closest thing that you have to it, and I don't want to interrupt, but I just want to give context, is what you would call terrorism when it happens in a place that's more stabilized due to not being attacked on a regular basis. So anywhere where the military is strong and there's an economy and then there's people doing things and there's white people that's protecting them outside of their borders, when you do things that is as a retaliation to warfare, clearly to what's happening to your groups of people all over the planet, then that would be considered terrorism. But think about this. People talk about drone strikes like there's no loss of life. And, you know, we talked about this before. There is a movie called The Good Kill, where the psychological weight of killing people, innocent people, people that's just walking around, women, children, everybody, just to get a target, is taking its toll on people that's, you know, across the pond, you know, moving a robotic drone that flies in airspace of people and drops bombs. Does that sound like terrorism to anybody? I mean, they have one point where they show a bomb being dropped on a funeral. They're burying somebody due to a drone strike, and then they go back and hit them with another drone strike during that funeral. Like, think about that. They're going to a funeral, the village or the group of people that stay around each other are going to a funeral due to a drone strike that happened earlier that week. Now, Paradox, correct me if I'm wrong. As these groups are there, now, the terrorist or whoever you want to call them, or he or she that's there, is the target. You know, that's all that matters. All the rest of these people are you know, casualties of war. Right, casualties of war. That's not terrorism. That's not terrorism.
It's not.
You see what I'm saying? Like that's what we mean by the definition of war. That's why we had to give another definition, because things are being defined for you. Loss of life is loss of life.
The winner dictates. You
know what I'm saying? Now go ahead, T. Yeah, go ahead, T. I'm sorry.
Oh, my bad. I want to get that.
Right. Yeah, I wanted to get that back and forth. Go ahead, T, man. I want to know no more.
You have some paradox then?
No, I just was going to say, no, he had me thinking just about what the defense secretary was saying, just about how, you know, it's proven to you that the winner of these events get to dictate what's right, what's wrong, you know, what's up, what's down, etc. So I just wanted to say that. Yeah, I mean, he just had me thinking about that. But go ahead, T. I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's cool. What I was saying, though, I mean, in terms of shock and awe on the raft of 9/11, they broadcast that on multiple channels. They showed the bombing campaigns in Iraq, and which was a strange feeling I experienced, because after 9/11, I felt like we were attacked, and I felt like we were getting payback. You know, got some background noise. And so it was a strange feeling, because once I've become more aware of my surroundings and how I fit into the context and the framework of things, then I kind of re-examined that. But war is intricately tied into the society. I mean, from football games to, I mean, you name any type of sport. You got the Super Bowl coming up, and you're going to have, and DC alluded to this in previous shows, you're going to have machines of death flying through the sky. These are not, these, like he said, I mean, these are not just for show. These are actually military weaponry used to kill. That's a fact. So that can't be dismissed. But it's celebrated, and it's so woven into the fabric that I think it's become a part of all of us. And even the Shock and Awe campaign, I bring that up because it became entertainment for people. It became entertainment. And that drives home how difficult this thing is. I just want to say one thing right quick and let you guys do your thing, is that I had a conversation with a guy who was, he was retired Army. I believe he was a Ranger, but he was a sniper. And he relayed to me a story about how, because the guy's on all types of psychotropic drugs, because he relayed to me a story about how he had to go on a mission to actually, well, I'll put it this way, he had to take out a young girl who was probably, I think he said, around 7 or 8. And he wakes up pretty much every night, he says, having nightmares, because he sees this young girl through the scope of his rifle. And he's pulling the trigger. He says he has on some type of frilly type dress. He pulls the trigger, and all he sees through the scope is a big explosion. Basically, it's like a 50 caliber weapon, a Barrett rifle, sniper rifle. And it hits the girl, and if you see a 50 caliber hit somebody, you hit them in the head, their head literally want to explode like a watermelon. And that's what he sees, and he wakes up screaming every night. So that's very graphic, but that's an illustration of what you're dealing with.
Yeah, and I mean, they clearly they have plenty of people that are willing to, you know, to jump out there and put that work in. You know, I always find it interesting that that when you look at this group of people, they don't have a problem. It's like you said, well, it's normal. It's like waking up and breathing in the morning. They do tend to, you know, from a media perspective, do, you know, make it appear that they're struggling with themselves, you know, to fight. But I mean, if somebody else was in charge of this thing and said, hey, you know, you guys have gotten beaten, let's go back and look through your history, and you were like, that's all you guys do is kill. You can't go 5, 2, 3, 4 years without having to go out and kill somebody. And that's just at that level. You know, they're killing us every day. So I mean, when you want to, if you look at our position under these people, and unfortunately many of us trying to participate, some forced to participate in this environment, and trying to be a part of, but you know, it's been continuous from the day they went into our land and started to take us away. However those events took place, and we got over here, it's been nonstop killing. And really the strange part for black people is that that's all we might know. I'm not saying we do know that. I do know that we have a lot of people who probably wouldn't hurt anybody, and it always is challenging for me to even wrestle, you know, kind of with the, you know, it's strange. You got some people who would never do anything, others who have no problem, some who are born into families that's all they do is kill. It's always just strange that in these type of at these large scale societies that, and I guess now it's male and female, that you have to participate in war if these people tell you to, and you have to protect their assets. I just think it's a strange thing when you really sit back and kind of think about the level of murder that you have to commit. And you know what's even what's really strange is that the reasonings behind it. So, you know, if you think, I'm not going to use animals as an example. I'm just stick to humans. But it's strange that you can have something where it, you know, you got somewhere, you have access to land, you can feed yourself and clothe yourself, and it's not enough. There's something in you that tells you that you need more, or you need to control more, or you need to control everything to possibly protect yourself for some reason. Your own internal paranoia, your own internal fear, because, you know, Dr. Wellesden makes a point about how the European goes into the world and sees people on the planet with color in their skin, and yep, sees that they can, yep, be genetically, that's annihilated.
It. That's it. Is that it?
Well, the question is that the trigger? And I'm asking it in question form because I don't have no answers. This program, let me just say this. This program,
yeah, go ahead,
is not to give you answers. I'm not here. I cannot stress that enough. I wouldn't say speak for the people on the line, but as far as myself, I'm just trying to get a better understanding of history, a better understanding of what's going on, just trying to get a different view or perspective, trying to change the way my brain is really wired, to try to see these animals as for what, you know, to see them for what they are, and to see how they influence non-white people on the planet, specifically African American. I'm looking at our group of people that we have to deal with these monsters on a daily basis, and we are infected, and we get infected, and their bloodline runs through a large percentage of us, and that's something that we always have to deal with. And you know, anyway, I'll hold right there. I know we're getting close to the turn, but did you go ahead? Did you have something on your mind?
Yes, I really want to really speak through the secretary, and we're about to kick off into break in a minute, but I want to go through some of the what he called additional lessons from R.S. McNamara, Mr. Strange. I'm pretty sure he got picked on as a child, but speaking to what you were saying about the amount of violence that's used and the ability to disconnect and to think about life in a sense of, to establish peace, we have to kill so we won't be attacked. So he has his first lesson. Now think about how the group that has classified themselves think about everybody else, and just think about the statement that I'm about to read. Now, this is Robert S. McNamara in his own words. His own words. You can have an opinion about what you think he meant, but I think he's clear. The human race will not eliminate war in this century, but we can reduce brutality of war, the level of killing, by adhering to the principles of a just war, in particular, the principle of proportionality. Now, you have to be pretty dominant over groups of people to say that the way we dish out to groups of people has to be proportioned to the ability to kill. I would actually go as too far as to say the Vietnam conflict, which he admits in the Fog of War, where they killed over 3.5 million Vietnamese, North and South Vietnamese people that are classified as not white, because they had a civil war dispute and they had connections to communist Russia at the time, and America looked at it as a communist conflict, that Russia could not get a hold of that country, that they had to enforce or impede they will get involved. And the reason why they did not go into whole nuclear fallout, in my honest opinion, because this was a decision that they did make, I am not white, I'm a victim of racism, was due to the nuclear fallout that happened in World War II. If they dropped bombs on Vietnam, that would destroy the whole infrastructure. So they fought and they lost massive life. Now, as everybody knows, people that are classified as black, if you have relatives that's been here for a while, you may have a relative in your family that fought in this conflict during the 60s and the 70s. And in the 50s, there was the Korean War. Same thing. The Korean and the Vietnam War, of basically North Korea, South Korea, North Vietnam, South Vietnam. And these groups of people refused. They'd rather die than to basically be subjugated. They called it slavery. Clear understanding about what was happening to them. Now, Vietnam, now we already know, and Korea also, are basically Western carbon copies now. You know, you'll have items built in Vietnam, China, you know, I don't know about Korea, but I do know that Vietnam, South Korea, you know, China and all these places, they do basically build things and they have a labor force. And this is all connected to how things are going to be run in these places after warfare, because the pieces had to be put back together. How do we piece our humanity back together when we had clans? Clans were like tribes in these areas that we now call Asia. We don't even have a understanding. That's why I'm like, it's so confusing, because we're calling people Asian when they didn't have a classification of being that before, just like we call ourselves black, but we have people that's from the tribal affiliations in Africa that never looked at themselves that way. So when you sit up here and say that black sold themselves in slavery, that's a false statement. That is a statement that is not true, due to the actual advent of people that are on the African continent at that particular time, and it wasn't even called Africa, but they're on that landmass at that particular time, distinguished themselves through tribal affiliations. They will be just as different as anybody else. Anybody else. We are not those people over there. We are completely different people. Now, the group that classified themselves, that begin to classify themselves as white, the European, the people that's going into conquest, they all looked at it the same way, empire. This is all about dominating this group of people. These are primitive people. Some of them are peaceful. Most of them are peaceful. They live out in the Serengeti, the jungles, or whatever you want to call it. they're not affiliated together in the same kind of, you know, congruent landmass, because you cannot dominate a group if they were all together. If we all knew what was going to happen at that particular time, that they was going to classify all of us as black, would you have the nerve to disrespect our ancestors to that level to say, hey, go ahead, you're not going to benefit from slavery, because right when you capture whoever your tribal, you know, your rival tribe is, we're going to come back for you also.
All right, this is the Code Breakers on Black Talk Radio. Go on a break.
Radio since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
All right, this is the Code Records. We are back. We are discussing the warmongers, the white supremacists, the white people as a whole group, the European, however you want to classify those people. DC, I still got DC on the line as well as T. Before we start, Mr. Reed, did you get a chance to get that? I just sent you a second email. I want to run that clip if we could. So I don't know if he's listening to me at this point. But anyway, we do have a couple of more clips that we do want to play.
You know what the number
we
one
might get a chance to get those in. I'm not sure at this point. T, did you want to make any additional comments? Oh, I think I got Mr. Reed. Mr. Reed, you there?
Yes.
Did you get that? I just sent you a second email.
Yeah, I got it queued up.
With that. Say that again, I'm sorry?
It's queued up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's go. Before you respond, T, I want to play that clip. And we can jump from there. I think it should be about 2 minutes and 9 seconds, if I'm not mistaken.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the war in the Persian Gulf. Big doings in the Persian Gulf. You know my favorite part of that war? It's the first war we ever had that was on every channel plus cable. And the war got good ratings too, didn't it? Got good ratings. Well, we like war. We like war. We're a warlike people. We like war because we're good at it. And you know why we're good at it? Because we get a lot of practice. This country's only 200 years old, and already we've had 10 major wars. We average a major war every 20 years in this country, so we're good at it. And it's a good thing we are. We're not very good at anything else anymore. Huh? Can't build a decent car, can't make a TV set or a VCR worth a fuck. Got no steel industry left, can't educate our young people, can't get health care to our old people, but we can bomb the shit out of your country, all right. We can bomb the shit out of your country, all right? Especially if your country is full of brown people. Oh, we like that, don't we? That's our hobby. That's our new job in the world, bombing brown people. Iraq, Panama, Grenada, Libya, you got some brown people in your country. Tell them to watch the fuck out, or we'll goddamn bomb them. Well, when's the last white people you can remember that we bombed? Can you remember the last white? Can you remember any white people we've ever bombed? The Germans, those are the only ones. And that's only because they were trying to cut in on our action. They wanted to dominate the world. Bullshit, that's our fucking job. That's our fucking job. Now we only bomb brown people. Not because they're trying to cut in on our action, just because they're brown.
I think we might be good on that clip.
Can I say something real quick?
Sure.
And I think that you know, I know a lot of people they like hearing. It's not even if you listen to the truth of that clip, and was that CK?
George Carlin. Yeah.
George Carlin. Great, great, great. George Carlin has now passed on. You know, I think CK does comedy like that too. They're very honest about white people. And I'm not gonna, you know, victims of racism. We have to. No. We don't have to do anything. What I would suggest is to look at how this country was established. The things that you're defining, the things that we define ourselves as, is based off a faulty paradigm, a faulty definition that was forced upon us. And I mean, we're here now. There's no changing what has happened. But you cannot erase what took place prior to getting here, because when you do that, in my opinion, we do a disservice to our ancestors. And it's not, this is not about being extra emotional, being like, you know, we hate white people. Our mentor, our shero, Dr. Francis Cress Wilson, gave illustration. And you know, me, Paradox, and T, we used to wonder, why does she keep repeating the same thing over and over and over again? Why is she just doing that? And she knew where we was at mentally as a group of people, the patience, the wherewithal to understand how our group have been mentally shattered to the point where we do a lot of showcasing, a lot of bragging, a lot of, you know, bravado, and we wonder why in neighborhoods that are tore up by our youth, and the reason why they're so aggressive, because of being powerless. You know, it's hard to lie to children, and when a child can see themselves as being powerless and stuck in a situation, they really don't care what you're talking about. You know, it's all about survival at that point, whatever survival is, even if it is destructive or not constructive. And this is not to blame anyone for whatever they're doing, but, you know, great point. And as Mr. Scottery just alluded, white people were falling out laughing. He said clearly, we will bomb the shit out of you. Facts. True. You can feel however you want to feel about that. This is a fact. See, I think that the dominance has been so clear, so prevalent, that we want to become white people. We want them to accept us as white. We want to be part of the Warren tribe. So we're asking for clear acceptance into this, because there is going to be a fraction of us that do not want to be connected to this group. And then there's going to be part of us that is want to be connected. And I'm not talking about people that work at 9 to 5 every day. I'm talking about people that believe in empire, that happen to be classified as black. You know, damn it, I'm an American. I want to go. I want to be able to do things. I love my so-called freedom. So, you know, when you have black people celebrating the Muslim ban, you guys know that a lot of people that are classified as Muslim are part of the African diaspora, right? Just for people to just give context. Oh, well, no, those are not us. Those are not our people. Okay. That goes down. There are American Muslims also. there are people that's going to be misqualified. There's going to be people that are going to that's going to fall in and out of classifications now. So who makes the decisions on who is and who isn't so-called Arab, if that even is a real thing in a true context of classification?
Do you think?
Yeah. It would be interesting to see. I mean, you talk about the immigration policies. I know we're talking about war, but this kind of falls in with it.
Absolutely.
The fact that we don't deal with the causative issues, so people will look at the immigration. They call them migrants now, which is almost, I think, derogatory. They don't call so-called white people who came here migrants. They call them immigrants. Or as Paradox put it, so aptly put it, occupiers.
Yep.
Anyway, these people are fleeing their country. If you look at the southern countries that are on the list, mostly in the Middle East, North Africa, these are all countries that are under siege by, guess who?
White people.
I mean, the people aren't just coming to these countries trying to escape their own country because they, you know, the ice is colder there. I mean, these people had livelihoods. You know, I'm sure they had industry, you know, whether they have it on a lower scale, not a lower scale, but on a lesser scale, like a, you know, a communal type setup. You know, where they grew their own food, and you had military come in there and decimate the place, depleted uranium, you know, dropping. You talk about Vietnam, dropping napalm, Agent Orange. I mean, just mass destruction. What are people supposed to do? And that just goes to show the power of racism and white supremacy, because at the end of the day, they still have to subjugate themselves and beg to come into these other countries to seek refuge. Totally powerless.
And they plan with you as well, because places like Canada and other places, they we'll take you in. You know, a bunch of gamesmanship. When you really look at it, you can definitely, when you have better vision on it, You can see the insanity of how it's a lot of moving parts. You can see the insanity of how they play. You know, when you have that amount of power to have the ability to play with people, unfortunately. And unfortunately, go ahead.
You know what's interesting about that too is that playing both sides of the game is what they're doing, as you were alluding to, Paradox. And the fact that you have all these so-called migrants coming into even like Europe, say European nations, classically European nations, is that it actually strengthens the ideology of racism and white supremacy, because you have people who are classified as white in these countries who look at these quote-unquote migrants. Take Paris, for example. They labeled these tent city jungle camps or jungle city, something to that effect. So you can see the demonization in the wording there, but it strengthens it because simply for the fact that when people classified as white look at that, they say, look at these animals. I mean, they're living in the streets, they got garbage everywhere, you know, they don't have a job, you know, they're not contributing to society. We offered them, we let them come into our country, and look what they're doing with it. This is ridiculous. And so that just it sets up a dichotomy where it not only does it strengthen that ideology of racism and white supremacy, but it also contributes to racial dislocation, confusion, which Millie Fuller, for those who are familiar, gets into racial dislocation and how that breaks up the so-called black family, among other things.
Keep them moving.
That where you can never actually have a true community or actually set something up that's going to be enduring, like an institution.
Yeah, yeah. And the other, you know, the other unfortunate part is that, well, you know, I wouldn't say unfortunate. I just pose it this way. I just want to see what you guys' responses are. But they use non-whites to fight their wars, and that's across the planet. Clearly us, but that's pretty much worldwide. They use non-whites to fight much of their wars, and die in their wars, which is still hard for me to process, but it is what it is. But and I was thinking today about when you have warfare. So I think somebody had mentioned shocking also a more recent war, which is when the Europeans went into the land that they already own and control, and somebody there didn't want to be obedient, I guess, and they decided to kill them. Oh, whatever. I don't know the facts. But anyway, I believe they did bomb Iraq, killed the family who they put in charge and of running it. Maybe they were being disobedient. Not clear on that. But you know, I was thinking that when they bombed them, those people, many of those people there, had to escape, had to run away, had to pack things up, and had to move. For the most part, I know many stayed and many have came back. But anyway, I was just thinking that in this nation, I've heard, you know, on the airwaves and in other places that we are under siege, specifically black people. We are under siege, or we're being attacked. Do you know, and I know we had some migrations and some things that have happened in the past when it was maybe it was I want to say more or less, but it was a situation. So we decided to make some moves, some of us. Do we have, you know, I know things do tie back to slavery and to Jim Crow, but we still had the propensity to go north or to go west in this nation. You even go very north in some situations, but and obviously some other places as well. But anyway, do either of you think that maybe individually, maybe being a part of capitalism, maybe being, you know, going into American education, maybe being from a black Christian family, maybe having certain ideologies about this land and whatever you think and however you've been trained to think, that there's no more movement that I know of in law. I haven't, you know, I've thought about it. Maybe I'm missing something, but there hasn't been any large movements specifically of black people. Now, I do know that you have other non-whites that migrate here due to events that are going on wherever they're coming from, that much of this place is involved in, which is even crazy, which is really crazy when you think about it. But all over the planet, you know, people are, you know, in some degrees, people are moving in large mass, and in others, they're doing what they're doing as far as fighting, etc. But for our group here, specifically here in the United States, are we seeing any of that movement? And if that movement is happening, is that being hidden? Or is it being hidden from us by the media or other outlets? And we just can't. We're maybe missing that movements are happening. I know gentrification obviously is a forced thing that's taking place, but us as large groups or collectively haven't at this point decided to make our next transition. Does anyone have a comment on it? I know that that's not necessarily, I mean, I would say it's tied to war, but not at some of the scale that we're talking about, but at a slightly lower scale than Hiroshima, at a slightly lower scale here, the way they attack us, the way they have things structured to move us around, to put us in particular types of environments, and even if they promote us, you know, President Obama, Colin Powell, or whoever, whatever name you want to pull out of a hat that runs a company or is an educator or is a dean of a college or whatever, whoever you want to pluck out, or anyone on the call for that matter, who has more access, do y'all think that that's even a thought at this point?
Yeah, You want to take that?
Yeah, well, I would just say that, I mean, it goes back to who do people define themselves as, and I think that that's where we at now. There's too many different people have too many different fragmented solutions to whatever their so-called problem is. But at the end of the day, my argument is the warring tribe, the white supremacists, the Illuminati, whatever you want to call these people, but these groups of people that are classified as white, if you look at the Senate, if you look at the House of Representatives, if you look at the people that are making decisions, that are on your newscast, even when the black person known as President Obama was in the White House, he was surrounded by all white people. When you're dealing with a situation as such, where you're compromising at all times, but you're clearly defined and then limited per your classification of being so-called black, I don't think that there is any kind of coalition that can build up without being noticeable, is what I'm saying. Like,
not based on what you just said, because the thing is, I think the top one, the richest families are all white on this planet, in this, particularly in this country. I know you have some other groups that have some wealth on the planet, but specifically here, you know, you have very few people that hold all of the resources and all of the wealth. That's not enough to make them to get people to move.
You're talking about other groups of people that are not within that class of the most powerful people that hold all the resources. The top 1% is what you're speaking about.
Yeah.
The reason why that's what I'm saying. The definitions. We are classified by race. Race is the white supremacy is the dominant thought pattern on this globe, on this planet. So people that are classified as white, even though there are massive numbers of white people that are broke, just like massive numbers of black people that are broke, come together and build a coalition together because of, you know, the advent of racism.
Not white people come together. I just mean that you have billionaires in Mexico, you have billionaires in India and China, you have people who have a lot of wealth and resources.
Okay.
But it just seems that the way it's structured, I won't say that it's limited, but it can cause confusion, because if I'm Indian or Nigerian or Mexican, as far as the words that we use today, I'm worth billions of dollars. The argument is that is it just the accumulation of wealth and resources? Is it the assertion of military might? And then is it the fear of the people that keeps people from not moving? And what I mean by that is that if we believe that we live in this country, we believe that this country exists, this is a real place, and we don't have any resources, not all of us, but we'll say 90% of us may not have resources, maybe higher, specifically black people, why would we not just go and deal with other things? What's not moving the group to say, well, that's what I was saying, is it religion, is it fear, is it what we're talking about on this call doesn't really exist, and they don't really have no power, and these wars never happen, and they're not in charge, and you don't speak their language, and you don't operate the way they do, and you don't have suits on, you know, and it all came from Africa, blah blah, whatever you're gonna say to function in this environment, just contrasting those things. So, you know, on one hand,
go ahead, T.
Not be heard.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to interject if I could.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, sir. Who would you like for us to? You have like a name that you go by, or?
Yeah, I was about to share that.
Okay, go ahead, sir. Please share.
This is Rob chiming in from Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And greetings to everybody on the line and to the listeners. And just building on what the last caller spoke on, I think that divide and conquer, in my opinion, would sum it up. living under that system, like, how is that affecting the non-white people, and how is that playing out? And I'm asking that question because specifically, it seems that my problem is coming from attempting to be quote unquote a man under this system. And my problem is coming from the independent black female. And I hate to say it, but as I look at my life, ever since my mother, it's been like, man, almost a constant castration at every turn. And that's all I wanted to add. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for sharing. We appreciate it. I guess just to kind of build on your point, and I may just ask you to kind of give me a little bit more clarity, but you did ask about the system first, right? Like, if there is a system that exists, white supremacy, how does it affect non-white people? Is that like what you wanted to kind of get some clarity on, like what we feel like, how it's affecting? Well,
yes.
As the program, we're called the Code Breakers, and you know, we have an idea that the system is primarily psychological. The system don't exist without participation. This is just along with anything. Money don't hold no weight. Anything that you do, you have to get people to move and motivate humans to move a certain way. So things are created, nationality, religions, things that's going to motivate people to move. So does that sort of make sense? I'm going to go a little bit further, but is that kind of like giving you an idea of where we're coming from with this when we think about the system of racism, white supremacy, how things are being defined, how they have imprinted their ideology on a group of people that are still oppressed in this particular landmass, and how we don't constantly attack this group of people that have clearly mistreated our relatives, our ancestors. It's no illusion here. There is so-called neighborhoods in all major cities in the United States that are basically depleted. People don't want to send their kids to schools. Black people don't want to send their kids to black schools. I mean, think about that. So what about the people that are left in these communities? I guess that's just for these people making all the wrong decisions, right? Then what about their parents? And then what about their parents? I see that's what we're talking about. Everything has a root cause. Like, people are just not acting this way in Chicago. This is not brand new. I mean, if you're old enough to remember, you don't even have to be old enough to remember. They show Good Time reruns all the time. And if I'm not mistaken, that family was originally from Mississippi, the rural part of Mississippi. James was not able to get into the unions. He was not able to work. He was a father that was there. So, you know, there was all kinds of, you know, negativity happening around him. Now think about when Michael or JJ, even though they grew up in that environment with a father, they grew up in the projects, and then they have kids. You see what I'm saying? And then those kids have kids. That's what you're looking at. That's what we're talking about. You know, even though Thelma was fine, you know, this is what ends up happening. Because most likely Thelma had kids. If you're talking about the real story of Good Times, Thelma had a rack of kids. You know, and then, you know, JJ probably had kids too, probably by different women. You know, that generation of males was from the pimp era, dynamite. Everything was basically getting on women, macking ladies, searching for what you just described, manhood. So the system is psychological, in my opinion. You know, what we suggest is for people to do the best that they can wherever you at in the system. If you can help it, try not to mistreat the most vulnerable part of our group, which is the population that is classified as black, that are from these these communities that are basically locked in. And just to speak, I'll let you go, Paradox and T, just a moment, just to give you a quick preference on the black woman. You know, I understand your angst when it comes down to that, but just think about the responsibility that's been pushed on to the black woman, and think about the weight of that. And I'm pretty sure you have women in your family, you know, whether they were what we call mentally healthy or not mentally healthy, that did the best that they could do, and that we have to be empathetic to the plight of that, because it's generational now. This is something that has basically ran like 2 to 3 generations in now, so it's locked in, this pattern of behavior that we have as a powerless group. And when, like you said, if you have a man that's not able to strike out and do his own thing due to the system of racism, white supremacy, and we think that there is one, well, we know that there is one due to the evidence and logical reasoning, then the gender mirror, which is the black woman, is going to look at us in that way, which the psychological damage that happens is basically twofold. Was that clear? I'm sorry. Was that clear?
Yes.
Did I answer the question? Okay, cool. Go ahead, Paradox.
T, did you have anything?
Yeah, no, just to say to the gentleman from Milwaukee, we appreciate you calling in, and to the question, I mean, well, the statement, I guess, about women classified as black. The thing to understand is that because we are within the system of racism, white supremacy, our relating is automatically going to be skewed one to another. And what I notice is that people's, in this system, people's value is based on their income, their level of income. In fact, there's times when I've been unemployed, especially the first time I went through it, it was very depressing. And because I started realizing how much I identified with having a job and how that gave me value in society and how much that controlled me. In other words, my intrinsic value was not based upon what I, you know, and this even sounds foolish for me to say this, but my intrinsic value did not lie in what I could offer the world or offer other people in terms of helping them, you know, speaking with them, having conversations, being someone who is what you might call upstanding and not inflicting damage on his or her community. And so when you're dealing with, so, and we know that in large part, and I'm not sure how it is in Milwaukee, and maybe you can shed light on it, but I know in our area, especially with all the government buildings and what have you, there are a lot of so-called black women in leadership positions and also in positions that garner a large income. You know, they make a lot of money. And so when you're dealing, and there's nothing that's wrong with that, but when you're dealing with a system that is built upon how much you make, then when you have more so-called black women in those type of positions and less black men in those type of positions, and we can get into all the reasons why that might be, but when you have that, that automatically alone, without getting into other factors, can cause a skewing of relationship. So go ahead.
May I interject 1 second?
Go ahead, brother.
What's your name that's speaking right now?
This is T.
That's you hit the nail on the head. That's what I'm struggling with right now. Thank you.
Sure.
Well, again, this is the Code Breakers on Black Talk Radio Network. You can reach us at 1-866-510-9025 and hit, I think it's **. To speak, you can obviously go and download us, our podcast on blacktalkradionetwork.com. Definitely do that. There's also some other programs on it that you will find very informative. You can reach us. Let me see. We are on live first and third Tuesdays at 9 p.m. You can email us at codebreakers1999@gmail.com. You can, on social media, I think we are codebreakers191 on Twitter and codebreakers_1865 on Instagram. You can also find us on Codebreakers on Facebook. If you look up Codebreakers, you'll also find us there. And we're going to go to break.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Racial dislocation. Keep them moving. People who are forever on the move through eminent domain, urbanization, urban renewal, gentrification, are here again, drying up the river. You build a dam 800 miles up, and the river seals off the water behind the dam. I mean, the dam is sealed off, the river is sealed off behind the dam. So that means that all the people down in the valley there, they don't get any water. They need water. They depend on the fishing industry. So now they have to come and work for you because there's no more water there, no more fish. And you give them minimum wage and a promise for the future as long as they look up to you. So they'll know they're completely dependent. But keep them moving. If a black person in the Northwestern Hemisphere starts getting that second generation house, then you come through and say you got to build a highway. That's the technique.
All right, the Codebreakers, we are back. We do want to say thanks to Mr. Reed and Black Talk Radio Network for letting us put on the program. I would just say, as I always say, one of my codes that I don't spend too much time commenting on black women if I don't have a black woman on the call. But I will also say that, in my opinion, the black woman is God. They give us life. I was praying to one of my ancestors today, one of my grandmothers, and just for better understanding. But anyway, not to go down that road. But I would leave that there. From a warfare perspective, fellas, I know we got probably about 20 minutes left. Did y'all have any other positions or statements that you wanted to make about the warmongers? Matter of fact, do you remember how we even hit, what made us even I think we were having some kind of discussion and it kind of clicked, not necessarily coming to a realization or maybe, but just was thinking kind of like, well, man, this is that's all these people do is kill. Do you remember that conversation at all?
Well, it's always been like the same thing, basically, that I think we was talking about Donald J. Trump, the president, and how he exude whiteness in a certain way that President Obama could never exude due to him not being classified as white, regardless of whatever your opinion was of President Obama and his policies. He was not a white person. So I think that we just talked about how the differences is as far as like how he came in there doing things and don't really care about your feelings, don't care about how you feel. He probably think it's real amusing too when people protest and things of that nature. So he was having a discussion about that, and then like we went into an idea about how when we think about the politics and the general politics that are going on here, how basically everything that is established. Oh, I remember we was talking about the Women's March and how you know, everything that we that we're protesting or that we're defining is based off warfare, and that the warfare that basically happened during the time that President Obama was in office still gives people enough room to share their grievances in a manner where there's no killing involved, because the power is basically so prevalent here at this point that they can totally separate it and allow people to kind of purge their feelings out without there being any kind of disruption as far as like the system is concerned. Like we say it's participation. There's no threat to things being shut down on a mass level, and that's the reason why I think, in my opinion, we decided to do this program.
Oh, okay. All right, that make some sense. Because, you know, every time I see something on television, you know, the TV, I'm trying my best to avoid all news stations. I did get sucked in over the last few days, unfortunately, and I had to try to wash my brain out as much as I can, because this stuff, man, you're getting a constant dose of lies and nonsense, man. It has your brain is so, I don't even know how to clearly it's not meant for us to be receiving this much information.
Oh, don't forget about Russia too. We talked about Russia.
I think that's about Russia. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, it's just a strange thing. When we think about you think about warfare, you think about what's required, the amount of risk that it takes, and really you think as well as what has to be done to you to want your group or a portion of your group, you know, to fight, you know, to be willing to put their lives on the line. I think that when you move into that kind of conversation, I know things get a little dangerous. We are on the internet, etc. But you know, even when I think about having children and thinking to myself, you know, this black woman is going to produce my fighters, my warriors. You know, she's the one that's going to bring that to fruition. So it's a fascinating thing that when you're willing to produce children, even to have, you know, knowing that you're going to go into war, knowing that there's a plight on this planet. And, you know, and again, we've established, I should say, not we, but there's groups of people who on this planet who has made it their life's work, you know, obviously through religions and things of that nature, but whatever they need to use, they proclaim things, and they've made statements, and they put themselves out there at the state level, you know, to say that we will fight to the death if we have to. So, you know, we do have a lot of examples out there. You know, one day, you know, I think that we're all gonna you know, get together, you know, go and knock these prisons down, even, you know, even something to that fact internally, that at some point, you know, we're gonna get tired. At some point, you know, we're gonna get the strength, you know, that steel spine, as I say, you know, to take the risk, whatever that's gonna look like. It's gonna be messy. You know, and you know, I'm not obviously a warfare expert, but just looking at a little bit of warfare, the amount of sacrifice that's gonna be involved, and even the division. You know, I think that, and I'll let you guys, you know, chime in where you want to, but I think that the illusion, possibly, that, you know, every single person of color, if you want to label it that way, is going to die for an idea that we might develop, that's never going to probably happen. You know, obviously in war you have division, so people will take sides. And I always think, what would even be our position? You know, clearly the white supremacists, the white European, the white American, they've already told us what our idea should be, what we should think, and what we should fight for based off of their system. But as far as the black people who are listening to this message right now, I want to know, you know, what are we, you know, what is the idea to create separation You know, what is the idea? Because up until now, I don't know. You know, it may be 1,000 years before we find that idea, but we are searching for it. But you have something to say? DC or T?
T.
Well, you know, in terms of continuing on the topic of war, and that's obviously, at least in my estimation, a topic that can be covered ad nauseum, because it's very expansive. And it is interesting because just knowing human nature and how, and someone may disagree with this statement, but I feel that there's something in all humans that can tend toward an animalistic type behavior. I mean, or there are controlling factors that may be over top of that to prevent them from leaning toward that side of their nature. But is it even possible to run a society without a military? And I mean, you can obviously have a defensive force. If you talk about, like, for example, Iran, aka Persia, which I don't think they've started a war of aggression in over 200 years, roughly. However, the only nation in the world who sanctions people for nuclear weapons development, or even the thought of them possibly, if they think you're developing some type of nuclear program, they will sanction you. But this is the only nation in the history of the world, as far as we know, that has actually used atomic weapons on another nation. And so, yet and still, they want to be the moral judge in terms of how other people develop, maintain, or use nuclear power. So, but getting back to what I was saying, is it even possible to have a society without some type of militaristic bent? Because there are a lot of, you know, in terms of the people going and fighting for this nation, people go into the military for various reasons, and a lot of times, at least in my experience from seeing family and friends, what have you, is that the military is the default. So when people fall into disarray, they have trouble finishing school, and there's a lot of reasons behind that, obviously. They don't finish school, they get in trouble with the law, they're not sure what to do with their life. What do people say? Go join the military. And not only that, but some people have economic issues. Most people do. And so the benefit of the military, they offer a lot of different things for people who go in. They pay for your schooling.
I would definitely say that I have a strong feeling that it's going to be a military person that to truly create separation amongst us. I will say that. I believe it would be a military person that's black. This is one of my prayers. You know, that has the skill set, that has the knowledge, and they are going, you know, at some point in the future, maybe it'll be a time of weakness for this group, but that might will lead many groups of us, train and develop and teach many groups of us at some point in time. I don't think anyone 200 years ago thought that this thing called nuclear weapons would even exist. So I know that radical things can happen, radical changes can take place. And I know many of us hope that different things happen to them physically speaking. But I think that as long as they're on this planet, you better have a defense system.
Absolutely. I think that's a possibility, Paradox, but I think it has to be tied with an ideology. And I'm not talking about an ideology of being black.
Because it's going to be beyond that.
That doesn't work.
Yeah, for
absolutely.
Sure.
Right. That doesn't mean it just doesn't work, the ideology of blackness, black power. That does not work. It's been tried many times, and it's failed. Black power, black nationhood. There has to be something completely to change the game. I'm sure there are people out there who
have ideas in mind.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I definitely think that, like I always say, the great thing about it is that people are trying. You know, people are trying to come up with solutions. I know in some cases these things kind of fall apart a little bit, and then unfortunately, our most vulnerable people get exploited. That's one of the unfortunate parts. Obviously, we've also been trained to buy and do other things based off this system. So, you know, we are trapped at this point. But I think that at some point in the future, and possibly even the near future, but I'm more of a 100-year thinking type of person. I try to be anyway. But that at some point, because you know what's funny about, you know, I don't know what the end of a warring tribe looks like. You know, does a group of people who are designed apparently to always want to kill, always want to take, always want to conquer, always want to control, always want to implement their ideology on other human beings and even on the earth itself, you know, I wondered, you know, does that have a limit? Do they know that they have a limit, that they have a time, and their time will pass? And clearly they're going to have some things in place, you know, possibly to deal with that. I always would talk about DC sometimes talk about the thing is the final solution. We would kind of, I wouldn't use the word joke about, but, you know, we kind of think about, you know, at transition points in future times, you know, what are some of those things look like, and where will we be? And again, one reason for these type of for these kind of calls for me personally anyway is to kind of think about, you know, these calls kind of drive me to think about, you know, when they make a mistake, I mean a series of mistake, how does that impact Black people? And I think people who are listening to this call and talking to your friends and family, clearly many of us are unfortunately will lose our lives because we're under white supremacy. We're under the white empire. We're in this thing called America. Unfortunately, this place will be attacked. It will be conquered. It will collapse. And hopefully we can figure out something before all those events take place, because one of my fears is that we've established, even on this call alone, we've established that we are around people who are not just psychopaths, but very, very, very highly intelligent, highly skilled, ruthless murderers that have zero conscience, can create their own realities and live in what they call peace and harmony. That's what they call it. And can sit around Girl Scouts and all type of nonsense. You know what I'm saying? Just the mindset to be able to mass murder and at the same time have this thing, you know, have camps and stuff. The more you think about it, the crazier it appears to be, obviously, in my opinion. But anyway, you know, my one of my bigger fears is that what do you do? What would they do with the Negro problem? When they might be vulnerable for us to make a move, or when they're just vulnerable, you know, they made some mistakes. The economy takes a hit. They get a few people in charge that maybe depletes the military. Maybe they break up with Europe. You know, they may be just going through something in time, and some other nations decide to collaborate or decide to make some moves, and there's a massive fight, and this may be more you know, sooner than later. Where do we fall? You know, will we be forced to go and kill for them again? You know, will we be put in very vulnerable, very dangerous situation? Because again, we don't fight for them. I think that they either kill you, court martial you, lock you. I mean, I know they have all these rules that they do to you. Because you're a part of this civilization. So I just wonder, and D, I let you jump in, but I was just wondering, do you, you know, what is our, you know, us as a group? I know we worry about economics. I know we worry about trying to get food. I know we worry about different types of violence happening to the men and to the women, to the boys and to the girls, and we're trying to figure out social things to get us through day to day, to get us access. I understand all that stuff. But at a larger level, what is our position if this place gets hit, or if this, do we have any contingency plans? Are we thinking about those things? You know, are those some things that even because let me tell you something, a lot of smaller groups that are very aware, very conscious, that's what people are going to go to. You know, so people out there who are, you know what, I'm going to let Deep jump in because I know I've only got a few minutes left before I start going on a tangent.
Well, I think you summed it up pretty good. I mean, until we can come to grips with the reality that we're currently living in and the way things are, we just need to just be steadfast and continue to reveal truth, and hopefully the cold and the psychological hold that white supremacy has held against people that fall into the classification of black can start to weaken, and then, you know, there can be real segue into actually getting this situation resolved.
Yeah, I'm not sure that even in that type of instance, not to say that I disagree, but I don't think that people will still be able to get past the race thing if something major or catastrophic were to happen. Because it's such a strong ideology. And I think that's why one reason they're trying to eliminate Islam. Islam is a very strong ideology.
Yep.
And it, I think according to them, it must be eradicated.
Yep. Well, it's one of their biggest fights that they got to deal with. One of their biggest ones. Might be the one.
I mean, arguably, you could say that the Crusades never ended.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I agree for sure. It all of it's connected, and it never stops. You know, it's all connected for sure.
Well, we know that this system is basically the most efficient, the most powerful system that's been known to man as far as we know it. You know, most of the population on this planet talks European languages. So, and they're only 10%. Of the globe, less than 10% of the globe. So, you know, how that makes sense. So, yeah, definitely, you may be right. The way that they have actually reframed people's realities and reframed people's minds by giving us definitions of race may be too hard to shake. But I don't think it's impossible.
But yeah, I think war. I would just say I think warfare will cleanse a lot of that. I'm thinking in those terms. I'm not overly concerned about the day-to-day interactions that we have and things that we got to do, like going to the bathroom. I mean, like at the highest levels, if it's enough war and enough cleansing, I think that a lot of that will check some of these things. But anyway, go ahead, Teague. My bad.
No, just right quick, because I know we're coming up on it. But this may be another show, but is Islam the only ideology that can challenge the ideology of racism, white supremacy at this point?
Yeah, yeah. No. Yeah, you don't.
Is that why they're so focused on trying to eradicate it?
Yeah, because you can bomb a country, you can destroy a city, but boy, a ideology that's a billion people that's believing in it and is growing every day. I definitely think that it's a big task for them. You know, I know one way they're trying to do it is by trying to create moderates and trying to create other. They're trying to trying to infuse different things into their societies to balance out that belief system.
Well, the problem is they have reason to resist, and the reason is very, very prevalent that, you know, they are living in these countries that are being bombed relentlessly. They're being terrorized. So with that, you know, you're just already born on a side. So the children are born into it, and it just, the ideology takes hold because they're being attacked.
Yeah, definitely be a good show. Definitely be a good show. But anyway, we're coming to the end of the program. Again, thanks, Mr. Reed and Black Talk Radio. This is the Code Breakers. This is Paradox.
This is D.
This is T.
Until next time, peace.